that cannot be understated. The cluster they just threw up in Texas that they turned on a long time ago, that thing's not going to be cranking anything out until a few months from now.
That's a whole nother level.
It's a step change.
It's a step change.
What is the role of Uber in a world where you have an automaker like Tesla cranking out millions of units per year of self-driving cars at a fraction of the cost than your competitors with LiDAR, and they have their own app? Uber is useless, right?
The team itself is really feeling confident. They're transmitting this in X. Certainly what we experience on the ground is showing that it's justified.
All of that just goes away, and all of a sudden, you're experiencing a robo-taxi driving you around all by itself, completely automatically.
By the way, it doesn't matter.
It's true. Tesla wins regardless.
Yeah.
If I'm somebody following Tesla closely, and I am on the bear side, or I am on the sort of, you know, skeptical side, the last few weeks, I am probably not very comfortable, because the rate of progress that Tesla has shown, and that's been the question since the beginning of the year, since version 12, Tesla show a rate of progress that is pointing to the completion of the software that is multiple years late and is one of the biggest overhangs over Elon Musk and Tesla and the stock, right?
Agreed. 100%.
So, if you're looking at the last few weeks with version 12.5.5 going out to the Cybertruck now, which implies a few things. Number one, a brand new form factor was able to receive the FSD update, a functional FSD update with the end-to-end stack, leveraging a fleet of cars that is not that car, right? So what are the implications for that? Okay. When the new car comes out, at maximum, it's a 10-month wait. The new car automaker wants to adopt Tesla FSD and license it, about a 10-month wait, right? So there is now a
on Tesla's part.
On Tesla's part. Thank you. Great point, Hans. On Tesla's part, right? So now you have this sort of on-ramping of this technology that's become very clear. They have the use case, right? And then you sort of accelerate that to the bot. Completely different form factor, but the underpinnings work, right? So that's huge. End-to-end highway stack. All right. Now they moved the highway FSD from heuristics to AI. Which car got that first? The Cybertruck. Again, so reinforces that thought process that, hey, like, they have something figured out here. Then now you're going to have this thing going on where in parking lots all over the country, you're going to have this metal triangle that already grabs a lot of attention, without a driver in the seat going from the back of the parking lot to the front. What is that going to do to the attention of the brand and the product, right? And then you're going to have, and Sawyer brought this up on X, shout out Sawyer Merritt, what's going to happen to the countless celebrities with gigantic audiences, not just going to show off their triangle, but they're going to show off their self-driving triangle. What is that going to do, right? And then now you have Robotaxi unveil coming up in 10/10. You've got that same technology going to Europe and China in the next quarter or so, right? You got the auto park feature rolling out in this October, right? And like another thing too is, it seems like Tesla has finally figured out how to be on time with self-driving for the first time ever. They put out a public thing with multiple things that people were like, no way this is going to happen, myself included, right? This is way too aggressive. And then what happens? They hit it, right?
And the most important part of that, and everything you said is important, but the most important is Elon told us that we're opening a new book. He presaged what was coming, and he told us that they had no longer have this limitation, the bottleneck of the amount of training compute. So we've seen, you know, this happen in real time. And so, yeah, we've definitely opened a new book. You're pointing it out that we're no longer, you know, missing these dates. We're no longer not seeing progress or seeing, you know, regression as much as improvement. It's like a different world, and it's a new book. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. I didn't think I'd been this excited for years. You know, I've always been the guy who said, "Whoa, you know, well, but perhaps." This is very exciting. Very exciting.
So the whole point we brought you on for, Larry, now it's dissipated. My God, what the hell?
Am I failing in my duties?
Hans, what are your thoughts? It's. I mean, I agree with Larry. To me, it feels like a bigger version of the Model 3 unveil, especially with the effort that Tesla has gone on, which I've seen on Twitter, to get all the people that follow the story very closely to come to the event. They're going out of their way to bring people with big audiences to cover the event. To me, that tells me that they're ready to show something pretty spectacular. You know, let's see if that's the case or not. But what are your thoughts on?
Yeah, well, I want to set the excitement around 1010 aside for just a second. Like, I'm extremely excited right now just to see what it is that they've delivered. And the fact that, you know, like we said, it wasn't Elon saying, hey, these are the features that we're going to roll out and this is the timeline. It was the Tesla AI X account that released that. And then Ashok was the one who rubber stamped it. So we've seen now Ashok over and over again has been extremely reliable in his predictions with release, with timing of releases of different things. And so that is really cool to see his track record has now held up. Cause I mean, when we saw that list, it was so incredible. That they were going to be able to release all of those different features within that short of a time frame. And some of the things that are slated for release now in October are also really exciting. You know, version 13 potentially rolling out wide, which I remember at one point Elon said that they're going to keep version 12 around until it officially goes to unsupervised.
Yeah.
And so I think the implication is that there is an unsupervised-ish transition that's happening here in October. Yeah. And I mean, we certainly have all of the individual components. Like it is now feature complete. It will be once we have the ability to reverse and do the auto park. So, I mean, it's just incredible to see the diversity of features that were, like, they didn't exist in customer vehicles a month ago, and now they exist today. And then especially if we fast forward another month and we get V13 and the reverse, the auto park and all that. It's a dramatically different car. Like, 2 months of time, and it's a dramatically different car. And
For
6-year-olds, like, I'm driving a 2018 Model 3. I was driving 12.3.6. I enjoyed it. It was good. But it didn't feel magical. And part of that is because it had worn off, but just like the amount of effort that goes into, you don't think it's very much, but to managing, making sure that it will continue to drive because you're putting in the necessary inputs to the wheel and doing all the things, like 12.5.4 just feels like a chauffeur. Like, you just sit there and watch. And that's it. And you don't have to pay attention. You know, is the screen turning blue? Is there something I have to do? Do I need to pull on the steering wheel? Do I need to hit the scroll wheel? Like, all of that just goes away. And all of a sudden, you're experiencing robo-taxi driving you around all by itself, completely automatically. And I almost never, like, my driving use cases are pretty simple. They're pretty straightforward. I don't have anything super complicated. So for me, and I'm not encountering, you know, I know a lot of people are saying they have phantom braking. I don't experience those on my drives. I've had maybe two instances this whole time. I've had 12.5.4. For me, I get in my car in the garage. I tell it where I want it to go. Then it just drives me there. And like, the dramatic difference there is between the way that feels today versus the way that it felt 2 weeks ago, huge. And it reinforces the fact that this end-to-end approach that we have really is working, and it is making steady and continuous progress. Because the question that I had, I was like, okay, we solved the compute bottleneck, but then we didn't see those wide releases very consistently. And so there was, to me, a concern that maybe there is a QA bottleneck that was behind the compute bottleneck, because we're not seeing these wide releases. Like, 12.3.6 was the only one that went wide for, you know, the course of about 6 months. And so it's like, okay, is that going to be hard for them to complete those, the QA, so that it can be safe for the whole fleet to receive these new updates? But I think what 12.5.4 shows is that Nick actually was right, and I'll have to give him like his huge props. All of those little releases that were just to the early access program, getting, they weren't rolling them out farther beyond that, not because they couldn't. They wanted to turn the crank and do another iteration, and they were getting enough data from those EAP releases to continue to improve the system. Yeah. And so they didn't have to go wide to continue their progress. And so I think we probably will see something like that continue, where the EAP, like, we'll see this constant iteration with the early access program testers, but that doesn't mean that there won't be a wide release that is coming. And like, it's almost just like you see a lot of open source development happen, where you've got the nightly update version of the software, that's beta, and then you've got the stables. And so like 12.3.6, 12.5.4, those are stable release versions, and they're just driving forward the pace of development with these little point updates to the EAP program. And the difference between that and like the implications of the accelerated pace of change that we have for FSD in that world versus the world where, yeah, we've solved the compute bottleneck, we really are struggling to figure out how to make sure this is safe for the entire fleet at scale, are just worlds apart. And we had to see them actually deliver. So I'm extremely excited. Take it away, Larry.
Yeah, I think I'm a little skeptical of your projection of how the rate of release is going to run. My experience in this is that the rate of release is subject to multiple different considerations, and it's very hard to predict what that rate of release is going to look like. I think they're feeling their way, and they're feeling their way in a new regime and a new release and software regime. So yes, for sure, it's going to improve. The rate of improvement and the nature of the improvement, I don't think is predictable, even to them at this early stage in the process. But look, there's no question. What we're seeing is a very confident development team.
Yeah.
I mean, the team itself has really feeling, is really feeling confident. They're transmitting this, you know, in X, they are broadcasting this. And certainly what we experience on the ground is showing that it's justified. So I think we are definitely, you know, in this new book. I'm pretty confident of it. I see a lot of very butthurt comments from the Tesla Q crowd. And, you know, I must tell you, two weeks ago, I was beginning to feel, God, this is such a optimistic view, this list that they put out. And here we are just 3 weeks away and we're not seeing it happen. How can it happen in, you know, in a matter of weeks? And it happened in a matter of weeks. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, I think the scale of the compute and the inference is really that. That's what's, I mean, I think one of you two mentioned this, but that cannot be understated, because correct me if I'm wrong, the cluster they just threw up in Texas that they turned on a long time ago, that thing's not going to be cranking anything out until a few months from now. They have to train that stuff, right?
That's a whole nother level.
It's a step change.
It's a step change. And so we're not even at that point yet.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very exciting time. I do think, you know, I'm very curious to see if this release, if, you know, once it goes, once all the Cybertrucks have it, once it's covered, you know, during 10.10, because I'm sure they're going to say something about it. It's like, hey, our entire fleet now has the ability to, you know, if we get the release of Auto Park, you know, Summon and Banish, and then they start teasing version 13 during that 10.10 event, which would make a lot of sense to me, right? I do wonder if the rest of, you know, and none of this is going to be financial or investment advice, but worth talking about. I wonder if the rest of the market will start to become wise to this development. Because, you know, my biggest thesis has been that the stock will not react to any of these developments until they can show net income in the bottom line that's generated from this technology. But at some point, when we had Nico on, by the way, shout out Nico. Nico was impacted by the hurricane in Florida, y'all. I don't know if you guys knew, Nicholas Gibbs investing against the grain. Husband and wife are doing fine. Him and his wife are doing fine. They're back to the house renovating. So if you follow him on Twitter, go give him a shout out, you know, give him their well wishes. They're recovering fine. Just, yeah, of course, when your entire house is under a foot of water, it can't be a pleasant.
How's the car?
The car's fine. He told me they went to a two-story parking deck. They plugged in and they watched Netflix. I'm going to stop there. I'm really curious to see how the upcoming events with self-driving will sort of maybe motivate the market to think differently about these releases. But I don't know. I don't know if, you know, I'm conflicted. What do you guys think about that? Do y'all still feel like it needs to show in the bottom line? Do you think the market will try to front run this development? Do you think it's material enough to be front run? Yeah, I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts. How are you guys thinking about this?
I don't think it's material enough to be front run because I don't think recognition will necessarily, I don't think recognition, I think the market is fully discounted it. I mean, I think there's about 1.4 billion left to be recognized. At most, they could recognize half of it.
For revenue, right?
At most half of it, but probably closer to 30% of it if they recognize any in this quarter. And the balance will be recognized in the next quarter, which will have a nice impact, but I think they will set that aside. What is much more interesting, order of magnitude more interesting for the market is whether this steps up the uptake. So yeah. if more people buy it, if more people subscribe, and what that subscription income will be. Now, if they can demonstrate a very significant rise in subscription income, the multiplier on subscription income in the market will be very significant indeed. So that's really where the focus should be. I could be wrong, but that's my read.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Hans.
Yeah, I think that, you know, remember, we're still $150 roughly off of the all-time high share price for Tesla. And so I think that we could see, you know, volatility between now and the major move could go as high as, you know, 350. And that's still really just trading sideways in this range that we've been in, all-time highs in 2020, 2021. And I think that, you know, a lot of the value that was ascribed to Tesla at that point in time was related to FSD revenues, which we haven't really seen come in. And so Larry's point, if we do see a much better outlook on starting to monetize FSD at a higher rate, even setting aside robotaxis, we have a lot of room between here and previous all-time highs for the stock to move. But then the real move that is the long-term move really does have to do with what you're saying, which is we need to see major money flowing through to the bottom line from robotaxi. And that is different and distinct from software revenue from FSD.
I do think the unsupervised piece too has a variable there because, you know, the unsupervised FSD software suite, one would think that Tesla can charge a significant premium on that versus the current offering, which is supervised. Even though, you know, even if you're not touching the wheel, you just have, you know, your sunglasses on or whatever, it works. And it works great. Like 12.54 on my car is freaking awesome. I have a 2021 Model Y. My God, it's so awesome. It's so awesome. It's by far the best update we've had. But I mean, I've been raving about the last few ones because for my use case, it works 99.99% of the time. But I know that I'm not most use cases.
What's the spouse test for you on 12.544? What's Cindy have to say yet. About it?
Yeah, we haven't tested it with her yet. Yeah, I haven't. The newborn's making it more difficult to venture out of the house.
Yeah, but, I was curious.
12.36 passed the spouse test for me very easily. But then my spouse was actually, she was game for me to let it drive when back in the 10 days.
She's been letting me do that since 12.36 as well. My thing with her more is like, I want you behind the seat of the car and I want you to tell me that you will not buy another car ever again without them. That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think that's going to be a huge one. I think the unsupervised piece though, you really think about the value proposition on that. We had car dealership guy, on our channel a few months ago. One of the best to follow on X, car dealership guy for the general car market. And he bought a Model Y very recently. And he talked about how the current FSD is for him is a gimmick more than anything. Like it is useful in some cases, but he doesn't really view it as a super value add to him because he still has to pay attention. For him, the real value proposition comes when he no longer has to pay attention because now that time, okay, I can do emails. I can do texting. I can watch a movie, blah, 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 blah. You go down the list. And the amount of people that are willing to pay to earn back time is a humongous number of people. And those people, generally the people that are aware of how much their time is worth are very wealthy. So you're going to have a gigantic amount of people that really care about their time. They're all going to move to this brand because this brand is literally going to give them back time. If they're not already being driven somewhere. And I think that's going to unlock another thing with Tesla. I mean, obviously they have to get there, but it's a curious thought experiment.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is that the value of FSD versus robotaxi. Now everybody's, you know, very excited about robotaxi and for good reason. I mean, there's no doubt that it has huge financial value, but I don't think we even begin to understand. Camera got itself switched off.
Oh, where'd you go?
I'm having this problem with my camera.
Oh, you're back.
Keeps switching itself off. I think it overheats. I've got to get a better camera. Anyway, yeah. So I think there's huge value in FSD without robotaxi. And I think, you know, we're kind of losing that thread, but it's very, very valuable.
Well, you're talking to one of the few people in the community who has actually modeled this. And I think I ascribed $50 billion worth of market cap today just to, increased SaaS revenues. No, sorry. I'm going to pull it up here. It was a lot more than that. It was in the trillions.
Why are you pulling it up?
That's a big difference.
Why are you pulling it up? I'll reflect on a very interesting fact. You were talking about we're $170 away from the all-time high. We're about that distance from the most recent low of the last year. Mm-hmm. Kind of halfway between the high and the low.
Yeah.
I don't often talk about, current share price, but it's an interesting fact.
I do think though you make an excellent point. I mean, technology that's enabled by this, if you can have unsupervised FSD on the current fleet, what that really means is that you've unlocked trillions of dollars of value because now you can have a fully self-driving network of cars that you can crank out of millions per year. My God. Okay. So can I tell a little story here? Jason Calcanis, shout out All In Podcast, on Hans and David now, Jason, if you're watching. Okay. Go on your block list, unblock this man and David. They were making jokes. Come on now. Stop getting so butthurt. He's a longtime Uber investor. Was he one of the original seed guys? Like the
Yeah, he was a very early investor in Uber. Yeah. That's his great claim to fame.
So one of the things he put out on X was he made out a post that says, hey, self-driving is going to get solved. There's going to be a ton of players and Uber is going to be a central player because they're going to aggregate everybody. And I replied and I'm like, what is the role of Uber in a world where you have an automaker like Tesla cranking out millions of units per year of self-driving cars at a fraction of the cost of your competitors with LiDAR and they have their own app? Uber's useless, right? And then he sort of replied and said, well, this is why they're not useless and sort of remade this point. And then I sort of a light bulb went up flash for me. There we go. That's better. After I read a post from Matt Smith, who's literally the worst person I've ever met, he said that where he said that, hey, this really highlights the gap in knowledge. There's a delta in the gap of knowledge here that is way bigger than I expected, because we have I really respect Jason. You know, he's somebody who's very well connected to that world of understanding technology and business and startups and everything. But the flip side, he's also, I think, you know, in the same way that we might be influenced because we are Tesla investors, so perhaps we have some blind spots. But boy, his blind spot is pretty freaking big with Uber, because if Tesla's able to do this, forget it. Like, it's completely forget it. So where did that take me to? This is still not understood. Like, people still don't get this. People who are really in the know don't get it.
Or I mean, he's even one of Elon's great personal friends too. And so, like, he's seen the thing up close and personal, and like, and I'm sure he has, you know, he did invest in Tesla and in 2008, and so he's an investor there as well. But yeah,
it's not like he doubts it.
Still a blind spot around Uber, like you said.
Well, let me defend him a little bit here, and far be it for me to defend Jason, because I disagree with him about everything. But I will support him in this regard. I think there's a role for Uber with Tesla robotaxis, in the sense that Tesla robotaxis will be in the Uber fleet. Uber does have a brand, and Uber will compete with their Tesla robotaxis, not with the Waymo type taxis, not with all those LiDARs, but they will find their feet with Tesla robotaxis. There is absolutely no reason why they can't compete with other robotaxi enterprises that use the Tesla vehicle. After all, you know, they have a huge market presence. They have a huge brand name. And for them to offer Tesla robotaxis when everybody else is offering Tesla robotaxis is a no-brainer. I mean, I don't think that Tesla's fleet of robotaxis are necessarily going to be the only fleet of robotaxis. I think the fleet operations are as important as the technology. Not more important, and the technology is not more. I think both have to be perfect for the winner to win. And I think there are going to be multiple winners. I think that there are markets in which Uber is going to play a role.
So,
that wraps it up.
So I disagree with everything you just said.
I want to talk a lot more.
so I, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure it's part of Tesla's terms of service. And Elon Musk openly said that the only place where you'll be able to operate your Tesla autonomy as a robotaxi is on the Tesla network. I distinctly remember this. So that already puts water, cold water on that hypothesis that Uber will be able to operate a Tesla robotaxi. Okay. So that's one. Number two.
Even then, I disagree.
Okay. But let's say that's allowed. It has an app already, right? And they own manufacturing of these vehicles. So they can make, say, 1 million robotaxis, 2 million, 5 million robotaxis per year, right? What is the sense of taking that product and putting it, allowing a competitor to put it on their network, right? And then that competitor puts a markup on there that you wouldn't otherwise have on your own network. And that price gap, that markup, becomes your go-to-market strategy. The Tesla app to get a taxi 20% cheaper than anywhere else. And literally the point of friction to download that app is just going on your app store and downloading it. And all of a sudden this app store, this app, becomes the gateway for everybody to actually experience a Tesla product. Why would Tesla give up that advantage? That to me seems insane. You know, just build an ecosystem on your robotaxi network. Tesla owns a robotaxi network. And that's kind of like what I'm thinking about Wii Robot. When that Wii Robot thing came out for 1010, they're building an ecosystem where the fleet management is going to live on the Tesla network, right? Tesla won't manage the fleet. but they'll create the ecosystem so fleet managers can exist on Tesla's ecosystem. You know what I'm saying? So like, why would Tesla give that up?
Distribution.
Okay.
Tesla doesn't have that, the breadth of distribution, the global distribution that Uber has. And Uber can greatly speed their move to market. But I think Hans has found his numbers. Did you find them, Hans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I found them a while back. So I was right. It's $50 billion of revenue in 2030 was what I was thinking. So then the trillions is, you know, what sort of a market or a multiple do you put on that? Because it's, you know, recurring, growing FSD subscription revenue. So it
typically
could be as much as
35 times. Typically, yeah, that would be 35 times. But
so just think, under $2 trillion in market cap in 2030.
I think that there's a lot to be said for what you say. I mean, maybe Elon wants to do it that way. I wouldn't. I would allow, you know, 1,000 blooms to grow, 1,000 what, flowers to bloom.
Yeah.
I would allow everybody who wants to run a robotaxi fleet to run a robotaxi fleet. I don't see why Tesla should be the only app, and I don't see why they should be the only supplier of the service. I mean, Tesla have got quite a lot of service centers throughout the world, and this service will allow them to support more and more. But Uber have many as well, and so do, you know, various other services. So I think that they should, you know, one thing I want to recognize one important factor. Do you guys agree with me that the quality of Uber rides have fallen in the last 3 years, consistently fallen in terms of quality 100%. Of ride?
Yeah.
Cars are getting older. Cars are getting less pristine. The service, the way they've stratified their services are not real. So when you buy a luxury ride, a more luxury ride, it's the same bloody car that would have picked you up for the lower tier. And, you know, I stopped taking taxis many years ago because the quality of the ride was so bad that it was insufferable. I'd do anything to avoid a taxi ride. Well, I'm getting that way with Uber now. The question is, how to avoid that happening with, you know,
the well, the reason
I have the answer, Larry. I have the answer. Run your own network. Seriously. Like, run, truly, run. You, all the pieces are there. Like, that's so everything you just listed is exactly the reason why Tesla would, they have every forcing function to do their own network. To give up that network capability and control the ecosystem to me seems like a gigantic missed opportunity. Go ahead, Hans.
Sorry, Hans.
I need you to explain more what you mean by do their own fleet management network, because I see zero evidence from history that that is a part of the business that Tesla would want to be vertically integrated on.
All I'm saying is if you hail a Tesla product, period, it goes to the Tesla network. And the Tesla network can be accessed through the app. And then if you want to run your fleet, if you are company A, Hans, Larry, and Farzad's greatest fleet of Turbo Taxi Company Inc., LLC, whatever, go down the list, right? Mm-hmm. We're a nonprofit and we'll convert to a for-profit and make a bunch of money, okay? So we're that company. And then we, as people, we can purchase Tesla's vehicles, right? We can purchase 1,000 Tesla Robo Taxis, right? And then Tesla will offer us the ability, specifically, we can only put those cars on Tesla's network. Because Tesla, if you buy a Tesla car, you can only operate as a robotaxi on Tesla's network, right? And then we just manage that fleet. And perhaps Tesla has tools that they can give to business owners, right? That says, hey, these cars, you know, the interior camera says it needs cleaning. These cars seem to have an issue. You know, these customers are complaining about these things. They become basically a provider of data to these businesses. And then the business, the fleet operator can then on their fleet. So they still outsource the fleet management, but the fleet operators have to operate on Tesla's network.
If you think about economies of scale, then you quickly get into a situation in that scenario where, whether it's Uber or not, a company like Uber dominates that specific fleet management thing that you're talking about. And there's no reason that Uber cannot enter that. Just like, even if they are operating Tesla robotaxis through the Tesla network, could still be a player in that market. But the, so I have competing sets of thoughts on this. And I think it's 50-50 whether Tesla will allow Uber to offer Teslas on the Uber network as well. It's hard for me to say. I know that Elon has said in the past that you'll have to have it on the Tesla network only. I think that may be true, but it also may not be true. But the counterpoint to what I've just said, which is the new mental model that I'm wrestling with now after a conversation that Larry and I had this morning, actually, is the fact that I think there's this class of new potential smaller fleet operators that we'll see a growing effort from, and those are dealerships. That there's an opportunity for dealerships, as their old car sales model is deteriorating, to become fleet operators. Their ability to handle service and washing at scale and moving cars in and out and all of these things that are involved in management, you know, I think these dealership locations are well suited to, other than the fact that they probably are currently located in more prime real estate than they need to be to operate that specific type of a service, since they're not going to be selling anything there. That could be a whole nother class of fleet operators that we see rising up to compete with the likes of an Uber here in the not too, too distant future.
Yeah, you just have to do it through the Tesla network. You know, that's literally, like, if you think about Tesla's proposition, have a car they'll be able to manufacture for $20,000-$25,000, whatever that number is, with the hardware required to operate self-driving, which is going to be at least a fourth of the next competitor with the cheapest suite of LiDAR, in addition to all the different management, right? So so that's that,
and the best software getting better.
Exactly. Like
if they achieve it, it is the best software, and it's getting better faster than anything else.
In millions of units per year. So the cheapest with the highest volume with the best performance. Okay. So, and then that their other competitor is going to be able to compete from a cost per mile perspective. It's not going to be the drivable car. It's going to be the driverless car from a competing driverless company like Waymo. But Waymo doesn't have, I mean, Waymo has their own app, like the Waymo One, but they're opening it up to Uber, right? Why? Because they specifically, right, they struggle with distribution, but Tesla doesn't. Tesla already has a gigantic amount of brand recognition, and they're just one small software, some small download away from being able to be on every person's phone that wants to ride hail. But the other problem that Waymo has is that for them, they can't even make a profit on that self-driving car because it's too expensive. And they're not in enough areas to actually be able to get the economies of scale to generate money, right? So in their head, they're like, well, we'll just have to expose people to this technology. So maybe we'll maximize the number of people to use this technology. Tesla doesn't have that problem. And then Uber, all of a sudden, will also take a cut from that price as well. The Waymo is already more expensive than the Tesla. It'll cost $1.30 per mile versus Tesla's whatever, 50 cents per mile. And then Uber is like, okay, add 30 cents on top so I can run my app.
But everybody will need to add their 30 cents to run the app. I mean, you and I, if we run a fleet, we'll need to have the 30 cents. How's Uber different? Look, you may be right because, you know,
Uber will add on top of you. Uber will add on top of you. So you'll add your 30 and then Uber will add their 30 so they can distribute for you. Whereas Tesla's already distributing it for you.
I don't know that that's true. You may be right. Okay. I mean, I listened to you, interviewing just the other day. Who is it you were interviewing?
Rohan.
Yeah. You were interviewing Rohan, and he was from Tesla, and they have a real sense of, you know, doing things themselves.
Yeah.
And so you may be right. I could be wrong. I would be inclined to say that just as you can be an operator, Uber can be an operator, and I don't see that it takes anything from Tesla. Look, Tesla got to leave you with a margin. That same margin is the margin that Uber could earn. I don't see that it it competes, quote unquote, from Uber. I mean, after all, Uber is simply a marketing arm of the drivers that are driving for Uber and their cars. This will be a marketing arm for Tesla and their drivers. As long as Tesla is not going to be able to replace all the service centers in all the areas, in all the countries of the whole world, you know, there's going to be room for, you know, Farzad's rental service and Uber's rentals. I mean, leasing, ride service or Uber's ride service. That's just
it. We'll see. Yeah. Good. Anything else?
By the way, it doesn't matter.
It's true. Tesla wins regardless.
Yeah.
We're like just like complaining about, like, we're arguing about like the silliest stuff. It's like, yeah, that there still will still be tens of millions of robotaxis running around. This is more like, I don't understand why. Anyway, I don't want to rehash it. Okay. Anything else?
Excited for next week.
Yes. I'm actually excited for three reasons. Taxi. Actually, I'm excited for a lot of reasons. We're going to have Pierre Farragut on the 9th. We're going to interview him before the event. And then he's also tentatively scheduled to come on the day after the event. So we're going to do a pre-show and a post-show, and we're going to compare notes and see how dumb we are in our predictions.
Exciting.
Following week, we should have Tasha. We have to confirm. So we'll have Tasha Keeney from ARC. We're going to reach out to James Dalma to get him on board after he goes there, and hopefully he has time. If not, that's going to be fine too. So I'm excited about all those things. Obviously the event as well. But then my parents are coming down that weekend, and Penn State plays USC. So it's going to be a very good week. You know what? For you, Larry, I'm going to wear my Penn State jersey next time we sit down and have a podcast together. All right, everybody.
I'll wear my Hoosiers jersey.
You're what? You're okay. And then Hans will wear his Oregon hat that he doesn't even support. So we'll go from there. Okay. Find Hans Nelson at Hansi Nelson on X and YouTube. You find Larry Goldberg on X at Tesla Larry. Thank you very much, gents. I'm excited. All right. Stop recording.